Father Leo from GraceBeforeMeals.com joins us with a very special recipe to spice up your married life, plus Doug Keck from EWTN and Gail Buckley with our Scripture Verse of the Week on a Monday.
Catholic Connection, weekday mornings at 8 a.m. on 990 WDEO.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the Internet at WDEO.net.
My guest for this hour is Father C. John McCloskey, who many of our listeners know from his many appearances on EWTN, his books, his articles. He's been on Church and Culture a couple of times as well. He's a priest of the Prelature of Opus Dei, and he's best known for the many converts that have been brought into the Catholic Church under his influence, including Bernard Nathanson, Larry Kudlow, Bob Novak, Robert Bork, Sam Brownback, and several others, if not many others. Father McCloskey, welcome once again to Church and Culture.
It's always a joy to talk to you and also to your listeners.
I'm having you on the show because many years ago you told me to read a book, and that book made a huge impression on me. And so I've asked you to come back and discuss that book and its author, because I think I would like to do our listeners the same favor that you did me when you suggested I read it. And that book is Witness by Whitaker Chambers, which was published in 1952, which tells the story of a man who was once a Communist Party spy, spying on the United States on behalf of the Soviet Union, who then moved away from that, converted to Christianity, and then got involved in the McCarthy anti-communist investigation, and specifically with his accusations against a highly placed and very influential member of the Roosevelt State Department, Alger Hiss, which became one of the most important political trials and show trials in the 20th century. So, Father McCloskey, are you ready?
I am ready.
I want to start with just the basic question, which I probably asked you many years ago, and I forget how you answered, but why is it important for us to continue to remember Whitaker Chambers, his story, and specifically his book, Witness?
Well, above all, he was a man of courage and also a man of faith. And he obviously was a man of high ideals who made the, unfortunately, but understandably in some ways, he wanted to do good for the world. But unfortunately, he decided to go with the communist view, the Marxist view of life, as being something that would bring justice to not simply Russia, but also throughout the world. And as a result, he went underground for a good amount of years, basically betraying the United States of America, until he came to that moment when he saw that he was in the wrong and not in the right. He was a very talented man who went to my alma mater, Columbia University, and he was brilliant there, had a great education, and then he slipped into this fascination with communism, went underground, and did a lot of damage, evidently, to the United States in one way or another, in terms of undermining the efforts in order to get rid of Bolshevism. Besides that, he was a brilliant man, truly brilliant, in terms he spoke five or six at least languages.
And one of the best writers in English that I've ever read.
That's right. It's his. I really do hope our listeners can get a good copy of the book, because it's beautiful. It changes people's life, like yourself. And it changed my life in that I read it when I was a young man of probably 16 or 17. as a result of that, I think is when I started to looking at conservatism in a different light. And also I wound up going to Columbia, even having some of the same teachers that he did, that had, of course, many decades before me.
Well, let's remind our listeners that Whitaker Chambers, who was born at the beginning of the century in 1901 in Philadelphia, and was at Columbia in the 20s at a time when a lot of bright, young, justice-seeking intellectuals were coming under the sway of communist ideals, and particularly of Karl Marx. But he was not alone. There's a long list of those who made that leap, but there's an equally long list of those who leapt back, you know, once they saw what was really going on, especially during Stalin's purges of the 1930s. But Chambers was one of the first to leap back, and he was also one who was willing to put his entire life on the line in the face of the ridicule of the media and the Washington establishment when he named Alger Hiss, a man very much beloved in Washington, friend of John Foster Dulles, friend of Adlai Stevenson, very close to the United Nations, in fact, had been in charge of the meeting where the United Nations Charter was written. It was absolutely inconceivable that Alger Hiss could be a communist spy. But he made the accusation. He went to Eugene McCarthy's committee, made it publicly. Then he was sued for libel by Alger Hiss. The trial did not find in Hiss's failure in favor, but at the same time did not establish that Hiss was a communist. It was only later when Hiss was convicted of perjury, but particularly when the Soviet archives were opened after the fall of the Soviet Empire, that even Hiss's most ardent supporters had to admit that he, in fact, was a communist spy. But that did not help Whitaker Chambers, who died in 1961, really a kind of a broken man. Do you think that's true?
I think it is true in that he was could have been a much greater figure in many different sort of ways if he just kept quiet. But he had a conversion to became a Quaker. And as a result of that, I think he, in the book itself, you can tell that what was most important for him was his family. And he knew there was a great injustice that was done, and even though he never lived to see it done. And of course, for all we know, there's still probably people out there who, at one point or another, maybe they were not traitors in the sense of Bolshevism, but nonetheless, in one way or another, also got mixed up in other types of things of treason in our country. Perhaps it's going on now, for all we know, but certainly not for communism.
Well, they're still bringing Nazis to trial, so I would assume there are Americans of that generation who are probably still at large. You mentioned his love for his family, and I recall that what first brought doubt into Whitaker Chambers' mind about communism was when whoever his handler was ordered him to abort his first child, which he did not do.
Yes, and it's also that, as you probably remember, it's one of the biggest moments in the book is when he looks at the ear
of his daughter.
His daughter, and he understands God. That is, you know, this is not something that comes out of the ground. This is something that only God could bring into his existence. It's really.
Yeah, there must be a designer. There must be someone who has designed something this beautiful. It was really a kind of a conversion experience based upon beauty. You think that's
fair? Yes. And as you know, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, that he was an expert. I mean, he had read all great literature and had the great, he had a Barzun teaching him at in
Jacques Barzin, yeah, at Columbia.
Lionel Trilling, and I mean, he was a man, a really great, great man, and who suffered for the truth.
We should mention that Whitaker Chambers, subsequently to leaving the Communist Party, was one of the main writers for Time Magazine, and rose to the level of senior editor. He left Time Magazine shortly after the Hiss trial was over and landed at National Review with William F. Buckley, where he wrote for a number of years.
Yes, indeed. I think there was one other book, which perhaps you have it, I think he wrote after that, but the one that is there is, of course, his Witness. And one of the mysteries, which I know I think a little bit about, unfortunately, what a great movie it would make.
Well, I noticed in doing my research that a number of Whitaker Chambers fans are just saying, you know, when is this film going to be made? Because Witness itself is a suspense novel. I mean, it's a spy caper, as it were.
Yes, that's
right. He's hiding microfilm in an empty pumpkin.
Up in Upper Maryland.
The home that he established to get away from New York and Washington was a farm in Westminster, Maryland.
Yes.
This is where he would eventually die of heart failure. And it's sad to think that a man of such immense talents would pass away at the relatively young age of 61.
And he was somewhat ill. He had illnesses and he was overweight, as you can see from the photos that he had. But, of course, just the pressure and everything he's undergone during his life.
Well, he went through hell. I mean, in that whole Alger Hiss period of trial, retrial, continued support for Hiss, even after he was convicted of perjury, I mean, he was a man who was not welcome in most centers of power in Washington, D.C.
No, not at all. And one of the things that's also very impressive about him is his languages, and also that he, in one way or another, did a great work in helping National Review in terms of making it the magazine it did. And also, as you probably know, I'm sure you do, is that it was Richard Nixon who was the one who really took on his case when he was Nixon was a senator in California.
And on McCarthy's committee.
On the committee, and he was the one who believed in him when many others still didn't.
The reason why is that the FBI shared information with Nixon they didn't share with the other members of the committee.
Mm. Yeah.
And another little thing that our listeners need to know, I mean, one reason why there was this incredible backlash against Whitaker Chambers, not only did he name Alger Hiss, but a dozen other prominent members of the administration of Franklin D. Roosevelt. I mean, he was the one who proved what Eugene McCarthy had been saying all along, was that that particular government at the time was infiltrated by communists.
Yes.
He made it
probably
stick.
Yeah, and some of them, probably the great majority, they didn't even know, because he himself only knew the groups that he had dealt with. And, of course, it was very, you know, relatively small. But, of course, there was lots of them. And by now, of course, all of them would have gone to their reward, or whatever that might be. But, yeah, it really was a threat to our country. And he was the one of the persons who suffered most for it, besides McCarthy, who was an unusual...
Another good man.
Yes, yes, a good man in terms of what he was trying to do, but he was sacrificed, and he was just hated. And he also had a sad end, unfortunately.
Well, and he gave them, his critics, a lot of ammunition, drinking,
yes,
and other things.
Yes.
And he made himself... Of course, when the media went after Whitaker Chambers. I mean, they went all the way back to his years at Columbia when he wrote a play for, you know, for class that was supposedly blasphemous. I mean, they pulled up every bit of dirt they could possibly find on him to discredit him. But he persisted in standing by a story. But what's interesting is that at the very first time that he went to the FBI, he did not bring any evidence with him. Why do you think that was?
Well, he probably in some ways thought he would be a loser or that he would not be understood. Or I mean,
he had the evidence and the so-called pumpkin papers.
Yes.
But he didn't produce that until the libel trial that Alger Hiss brought on years later. I mean, he first went to the FBI in 1938 or 9 it was, and it was 10 years before this Hiss case, 1948, came to trial.
We'll never know the answer to that, although one of the things that's interesting is his son is still living. And, in fact, the main reason, which I know from another source, why there has not been a movie is that he has not given up the rights, I guess, to the book from which the movie would be made. And that could be part of the problem there.
Well, having struggled with rights myself, movie rights over famous American figures, I can tell you, families rightfully are very concerned about the way the legacy of their fathers, grandfathers, aunts, and uncles are going to be handled by Hollywood.
Well, of course, you're right, and particularly in his case, you know, he was an overweight man, kind of looked like a frog almost,
and he had homosexual problems, he had things that if a Hollywood screenwriter and director wanted to make him look really bad, it could be done.
Yeah, right.
But the heroism is what is the great story of Whitaker Chambers.
Yes, and a book that everyone should read. It really changed your lives. I found a few quotes.
Please read a few give our listeners a sense of his the power of his pen.
He said, "I know I'm leaving the winning side for the losing side, but it's better to die on the losing side than to live under communism. A man is not primarily a witness against something. That is only incidental to the fact that he's a witness for something. Religion and freedom are indivisible. Without freedom, the soul dies. Without the soul, there is no justification for freedom."
Wait, read that again. I mean, that's a very important point.
Religion and freedom are indivisible. Without freedom, our soul dies. With the soul, there is no justification for freedom. Perhaps our bishops should take that up as something they could use.
It's such a powerful but simple statement because we are a country which has forgotten that simple point that the whole notion of human freedom and human dignity stems from the long centuries-old face of Judaism and Christianity in the West. And you take that away, and you have nothing to base those claims on.
Yeah, it's a complete going away from the natural law, which everyone can know and should know. And then, of course, religion, and particularly our faith, is the one that has the fullness of it quite clearly. And our country itself, I mean, it would be very interesting if we could have a meeting with Whitaker or be able to bring him on to see what he sees going on in the United States of America right now in many different areas. that is not dissimilar. It's, you know, communism is one thing, but doing against the natural law in the way that we're doing in this country is something that certainly Whitaker would have had a lot to say about.
In fact, next to Witness, probably the most influential and powerful piece he ever wrote was his 1947 review of Ayn Rand's novel Atlas Shrugged, which was published in the National Review, in which he just completely took Ayn Rand apart. And it caused a split in the conservative movement. The libertarian side were furious with Bill Buckley in the National Review and canceled their subscriptions. But the point he was making in criticizing the book was precisely this, that you cannot have a genuine conservatism and espouse human freedom without God. And Ayn Rand was trying to create an atheistic form of conservatism, which, according to Whitaker Chambers, just wasn't possible.
What an awful person she was, also. Just her whole life tells the story. As a, you know, the way she lived and so on is very, very sad, but also anyone who pays attention still to her writings, you have to really question their sanity.
Well, I find it very troubling, for example, that, you know, a prominent Catholic senator, a good man,
yes,
you know, continually refers to his admiration for Ayn Rand.
He does.
Paul Ryan.
Yes, exactly. I wonder if he still does that. I mean, if you want to be a libertarian, there's in a Catholic sort of way, there's ways to do it. But she's certainly not someone that you would want to cite, given the hatred she had towards Christianity.
But also this basic point that you know, beyond her own personal problems as a, you know, in her life,
sure,
her philosophy was flawed. And what Whitaker Chambers says in this review, 1947 review in National Review, is that there's very little difference between the kind of conservative ideal of a person that she creates in Atlas Shrugged, you know, Ragnar Denaskold and all these crazy names that she comes up with, and the communist and Marxist persons that were the product of communism, because they both begin with the premise that there's nothing in the world except its materiality. And so he says that all Ayn Rand does is replace God with the dollar sign.
Yes. Now, and another quote of his is that economics is not the central problem of this century. It is a relative problem which can be solved in relative ways. Faith is central, is the central problem of this age. And of course,
now, but, you know, it's interesting that, you know, he, for example, when Bill Buckley would talk to him about the Catholic Church, Whitaker Chambers says, I'm not going to be part of any, you know, institutional orthodoxy. And here he was, this seemingly tremendous witness to Christianity, which is expressed very, very profoundly at the end, the beautiful image at the end of the introduction of Witness, where he talks about coming out of the woods and seeing the three crosses on the hill. But yet he did not really, even though he talked about being a Quaker, there were times he attended Episcopalian churches and other churches. He didn't want to settle down anywhere.
No, although he does in the book, as I remember, talk very positively about the Catholicism of the FBI agents in those days. They were virtually all...
All those Irish Catholics.
All those Irish Catholics, and great he's talking about them, including their faith, and, you know, these are the people that surrounded him. But unfortunately, he was... I think a lot of it, as you mentioned, he had personal problems and so on, and Unlike many people today who really won't look at Catholicism because it's something, unfortunately, that they're not willing to...
Well, it makes moral demands. It's not just a worldview.
That's exactly right.
It's not just a worldview.
That's the way of putting it.
And I'm talking with Father C.J. McCloskey about the remarkable life and work of Whitaker Chambers. Whitaker Chambers, born... 1901, died in 1961, was a writer for Time magazine, very, very successful for the National Review. But prior to that was a communist spy who in 1937 reported that his faith in Marxism had died and he had embraced Christianity. And from there he went on to voluntarily inform on the many communist spies that were in the Roosevelt administration, which then created a firestorm of criticism and dismissal and of complete, how should we say, ad hominem attacks that really never ended until his death in 1961. And the book that we're urging you to read, the book that Father C.J. McCloskey put in my hands for the first time, Witness, is available online and at most bookstores, although today I dropped by Barnes Noble and they didn't have it. And, of course, I will say that the man at Barnes Noble was very embarrassed they didn't have it. Please stay with us. After this short message, we'll be back with Father C.J. McCloskey to talk more about Whitaker Chambers and Witness.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, Latin Rite Catholics familiar with the Tridentine Mass have also found a home in the liturgies of the Eastern churches. Our special guest,
Lisa Bergman,
will help us see how they are the same and
how they are different.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO, Ave Maria Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchuk.
Isaiah 50, verse 4 says, "The Lord has given me a well-trained tongue." Do you know how to watch your mouth? Catholics have a tradition called charitable interpretation. That means that even when we feel like someone is being intentionally offensive, we should try to assume that maybe we're missing something, and instead of lashing out at them, give them the benefit of the doubt and ask them to explain themselves. The next time you feel like someone you love is doing something stupid or offensive or just plain old irritating, instead of snapping back, train your tongue to practice charitable interpretation and ask them this question. "Hey, when you said that, it kind of hurt. What did you really mean?" Then, listen to their explanation and work together to find ways to avoid misunderstandings in the future. I'm Dr. Greg Popchuk, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Hi, Deacon Tom here with a reminder that Ave Maria Radio has some terrific gift ideas for you. Books by our hosts and our guests, recordings on CD, and our new Wi-Fi radios, so you can listen to Catholic radio anywhere in the world, anytime you want, as long as you have a Wi-Fi connection. Just go to our website and click the word store on the right side of the page, just below the EWTN logo. It's an easy way to shop, and you can help Catholic radio at the same time. The website can be found at AveMariaRadio.net.
With Father C.J. McCloskey, we're talking about the life and legacy of Whitaker Chambers, one-time communist spy, a Christian convert, writer for Time, National Review, was present at the anti-communist hearings of Senator Joseph McCarthy, named names, that led into a very public series of trials with a man named Alger Hiss, was subsequently found to be telling the truth, but didn't really live long enough to get the kind of appreciation and adulation he richly deserved. Father, I read one comment on the importance of Whitaker Chambers, and that is that after the publication of Witness in 1952, any form of atheistic conservatism was simply no longer tenable, that he had argued so persuasively and so powerfully in his book Witness, especially in comparing communism and Marxism to the kind of atheistic conservatism of Ayn Rand, that it really sort of put the stake through the heart of that. Do you think that's fair?
I think it's very fair. He's very important in that regard. Anyone who knows the story, and hopefully someday sees the movie, will see how important he was, at least in making very clear that what has to be first in any person's life is or if they're going to make any type of judgments, it has to be in terms of what they believe in the eschaton, so to speak, about religion. Religion is the answer. And, of course, we and the people who are listening to us, you know, we know where we stand. But that's the way we worship, the way we follow the commandments, with the way we look at the natural law. Those are the things that really should be shaping up our particular opinions in terms of who we support in one way or another, and of course in the way that we lead our lives day to day until that moment we're called to judgment.
Do you think that those of us who call ourselves Catholic conservatives or conservative Catholics are creating a kind of misunderstanding, or do you think it's fair to use that kind of language?
Well, I think one could use that language, but then you'd have to be able to explain why you're using it. It's why it's so important, and perhaps we'll do another talk someday on knowing the teachings of the Catholic Church well, and particularly the social teachings of Pope Leo XIII, which precisely address very clearly almost everything you can imagine that we're called to do in terms of using being a part of the people who are elected and what party we belong and so on. That is, it's not the church is telling us how to vote, but it gives us, coming from the scripture, the natural law, and in the following of Jesus Christ, that there are certain things as a Catholic we must hold in order to be truly in the fold. And that's where we look first. And then after that point, there could be many different ways of approaching the economy or whatever you want, the way you spend your life, etc. But at the heart has to be the love for the church, which has been given to us precisely by our Lord as a guide that helps us precisely not to make those type of mistakes as so many people do today.
You know, I think Whitaker Chambers obviously didn't have a love for the church per se, but he did have a love for the poor, and which is what initially led him to believe in the faith of communism. And in Witness, you know, one of the things that surprised a lot of people is that he had a kind of social, call it a social justice theme. And the way that expressed itself was in his praise of Les Miserables, the great novel by Victor Hugo. And it's also
a couple
of great movies.
Right.
And it is said that one reason he left National Review when he did is that he just did not feel comfortable with the doctrinaire conservatism of National Review, that kind of blue blood conservatism,
yes,
which didn't have a populist dimension.
Yes. No, I think that's a beautiful way of putting it. You know, that remember, we do have to have an option for the poor and so on. But, of course, it's not a question necessarily of what type of politics we have. It's also in terms of the way we put the poor first. And the poor are sometimes people who are wealthy in another way. That is, they're people who are lost. And I am right now speaking from California, and it's a very interesting experience being out here and watching the unusual ways of living. But it's sad in some ways. And of course, there are many good Christians and Catholics, I'm sure, in California. But to see how people are just basically living for this life and not for the next. And of course, that will destroy any healthy country. And perhaps to some extent, it's doing it now.
I can't help but want to quote to you a line or two from this 1947 review of Atlas Shrugged by Whitaker Chambers, which again created probably an ongoing division in the conservative movement between the traditional conservatives and of the Bill Buckley tradition and libertarians. And here's what he said. Any materialism only has two possibilities. He says, first, his tragic fate becomes without God more tragic and much lonelier. In general, the tragedy deepens according to the degree of pessimism or stoicism with which he conducts his hopeless encounter between human questioning and the silent universe. Or, number two, man's fate ceases to be tragic at all. Tragedy is bypassed by the pursuit of happiness. Tragedy is henceforth pointless. Henceforth, man's faith without God is up to him and to him alone. His happiness is strict materialist terms, lies with his own workaday hands and ingenious brain. His happiness becomes, in Miss Rand's words, quote, the moral purpose of his life. And this is the best part right here. He says, here occurs a little rub whose effects are just as observable in a free enterprise system, which is in practice materialist, as they would be under atheistic socialism. That rub is that the pursuit of happiness as an end in itself tends automatically and widely to be replaced by the pursuit of pleasure.
Yes, and Only Christianity, and most particularly our Christianity, the Catholicism, says that the real joy of is preparing ourselves for what we're going to be forever if we are faithful and die in a state of grace, and that we have given ourselves. You know, as John Paul II said so many times, it's about the gift of self. We are not here just here. We are here to give the best of what we have to people around us. And that's something it's very difficult for people to understand. It's not a matter of longevity, that we are going to be judged and fairly, because certainly because God is fair, by the fact that we have given ourselves to wife, to children, to friends, and so on. But we don't live for this life. We live for the next.
As you mentioned at the very beginning of our interview, the most important thing in Chambers' life seemed to be his children, because that's where his first doubts arose when he was ordered by his communist control to abort first child. And then later on, when he finds himself gazing contemplatively at the design of his daughter's ear, he realizes with a kind of powerful vision that there must be a God behind the design of this ear. No, there's no other way it could have come about. He seems to be a man who's, regardless of his working for the Communist Party, had a heart for the simplicity of loving people and loving his family.
Yes, you know, to love, an old song, you love with the ones you're with. You might remember that from the 1960s. But that's what we're called to do, is love the people that are around us, that they've been given to our charge, that we're related to, that we have friendships with. And, of course, all that in imitating the life of Christ, which is what gives us that joy that we want to share with the other people around us, which we're hearing so much about from Pope Francis.
Father McCloskey, as you look around and look at the political leadership that claims itself to be conservative, Would you say, for the most part, that conservatives are deriving their understanding of freedom from a supernatural basis, or have they caved into, you know, what Whitaker Chambers found in Ayn Rand, and that is an attempt to create freedom on a materialist assumption of the world?
I think a lot of the candidates, let us say, that including, unfortunately, to some extent, Catholic candidates, let us say, for the presidency, some of whom you know and some I know, generally don't, it's hard to say, obviously, what's in their heart, but what's most important has to be the life, I mean, the human life, the marriage, family, an end to abortion. I mean, there's all those things that are making our country a sewer in many ways. The crashing awfulness of trying to take away religious liberty throughout our country. So I understand exactly what you're saying, and it's very troubling to me. In fact, I've been writing a little bit on it, and hopefully it'll have something out fairly soon on it, on this whole question, where are the Catholic leaders, real Catholic leaders, in terms not only of, let's say, this Congress, but also those who were running for president? Because for the first time in a long time, we do have five or six or seven even people who are Catholic, evidently, who are seem to be running. It'll be very interesting in the months ahead to see if they will recognize their
faith. Well, we have Jeb Bush, we have Marco Rubio, and we have Rick Santorum.
Right, and maybe a couple of others there.
Chris Christie is Catholic.
Yes. That's precisely what brought me to start writing on this particular area. So, where are they? Where are they really? Or are they going to stand up against abortion? Are they going to stand up for religious liberty?
Well, I think that, as you know, Jeb Bush has run into criticism from conservatives for his stand on immigration, which is, from the conservative point of view, a kind of liberal amnesty stand. But this is analogous to the kind of thing that Whitaker Chambers was doing in Witness, and the reason, again, he didn't feel entirely comfortable at National Review. There was this, for lack of a better phrase, social justice component to his conservatism, which was based upon his just fundamental desire to help people, to, you know, use the power of government to provide some sort of safety net. And I know that, you know, the whole idea of a safety net has been debated, that it should be a safety net, not a trampoline, I think is the latest thing. But, I mean, Jeb Bush would be a good example of someone who is going into the fray as a conservative and a Catholic, but is willing to take heat on issues that sort of the dominant conservative voices, say talk radio voices, consider complete heresy.
Yes. Well, that's perhaps a good sign. We'll see how this works out in the months ahead, and thinking of Whitaker Chambers, what would Whitaker have done?
Well, I think, you know, and, you know, Marco Rubio, since we're on the subject.
Yes.
When Pope Francis made some very positive comments about immigration and urged the United States to act, and particularly about the normalization of ties to Cuba, Marco Rubio got out there and made comments critical of the president's decision to normalize relations with Cuba, but unfortunately, reporters then went and accused Marco Rubio of criticizing Pope Francis.
Right.
And that's the way things are done in Washington.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm afraid so.
So Catholic politicians have this precarious position of knowing they can't beat the Pope. You know, they simply can't. I mean, even if they think the Pope is wrong on some prudential judgment or another.
Sure. No, it's a loser.
It's a complete mistake to come out on an issue in a way that can make you appear as a Catholic politician to be mm-hmm. critical of the Holy Father. You are not going to win that fight.
No, and it shouldn't be even thought of. The Holy Father, he's giving his opinion, and it should be listened to, but one need not criticize it. It's just not right. I agree with you completely.
I will tell this little story for our listeners. That day I was called by somebody in Senator Rubio's office
mm-hmm.
and asked me for my reaction to the Cuba story. And I said, I think what the senator said was fine. The problem is he said it in the context of Pope Francis's approval mm-hmm. of the normalization of ties with Cuba. And therefore, the senator's comments are going to be seen as directly critical of Pope Francis. 3 days later, the story came out, and is still coming out.
Yes.
But their office, Rubio's office, was so intent on, you know, speaking out for its Cuban constituency, which is where Senator Rubio is from, Southern Florida, that they simply couldn't figure out a way to speak without being caught in that particular form of political, how you want to put it, lawnmower. I mean, it just chews you up.
Well, you have a lot of experience yourself.
I've been caught in a few of those.
Yes. So you.
But again, I see Chambers is a great example of. So here you have this convert from communism to Christianity, but he still is a man of the people. He still cares about the issues of justice.
Yes.
Of the poor.
Communism.
That brought him. He still, as a Christian, he still does. As a conservative, he still does. Right?
Of course.
Now, somebody like that he was at Time Magazine under Luce, and I think that gave him enough freedom to to exercise those particular muscles. In fact, what made him go so high at Time Magazine was his support for Chiang Kai-shek in China, the fight against communism, which Henry Luce, who had spent a lot of time in China, completely agreed with. But once he moved over to National Review, that was a whole different sort of platform.
Well, you know, he wrote under Luce a very, very fine examination of Catholicism of the monasteries. So you
can, is that right? What was that? How did that come about?
I don't know exactly, but I remember reading it very well, and it's fairly long. I'm sure you probably can, you and our listeners hopefully could find.
Well, there are several volumes of Whitaker Chambers' miscellaneous journalistic writings. I'm sure they're
it would be there
found
it would
there
be there without question.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that? Do you think that Chambers was ever attracted to the Catholic faith?
Yes. You can see that by reading this particular piece that I mentioned. Yes, I think he was. It's just the poor man was a wreck. It was all that he'd gone through and a sufferer. And I think that you put it, you know, he just wanted to be, you know, be where he was in Westminster, Maryland, till he died. And he will live forever, certainly in literature, with the book that we've been looking at, because it certainly made an enormous part in my life and also in many others, including, and I should mention it because you mentioned Bob Novak. Bob Novak, of course, converted to Catholicism, and one of the main things he converted it was because of Whitaker Chambers.
Did you put Chambers in his hand?
Yes.
Good for you.
Yes.
Good for you.
And he really, that had a huge impact.
I'm kind of surprised he hadn't read it, and you know, before you gave it to him.
Well, it's possible he had read it once, and then he read it again, and then he then gave me a bound copy of it, a special kind of edition.
That's
of
wonderful. Did he inscribe it to you?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's great.
But it's interesting. There are books. There are just a handful of books that have this power. And in fact, those who have compared Whitaker Chambers' way of writing and speaking and witness with Ayn Rand and her followers.
Oh.
In fact, what Chambers points this out in his review of Atlas Shrugged, that the author is always screaming, yelling, dictating, always speaking in the tone of utter authority. You know, you must, you must, you must. Whereas in Chambers, he's lyrical, he's poetic, he tells stories. One person said he's sermonic.
Yes.
In his writing style.
Yes.
Which makes him that much more persuasive.
Well, you know, I wanted to bring up very quickly another great Columbia person, and that was Thomas Merton. Who
was there at the same time.
More or less around the same time.
It yeah, and he was wandering through the library and came across Jill Stone's book on Christian philosophy, right?
That's right. And so, you know, and they both had the same professors. And a lot of that had to do with what we call the core curriculum. The Columbia is the only Ivy League university that has that, where they read the great books and they had great teachers. And that doesn't mean they became saints, but they were nonetheless people who really were thoughtful in one way or another and made a difference.
And there is another parallel, because if you call, let's say we could call Whitaker Chambers' 1952 Witness his conversion story, so to speak.
Yes, that's right.
His testimony.
That's right.
Well,
yes.
Merton's Seven Story Mountain, which was published only 4 years before Witness in 1948, it has had the kind of influence that you could compare to Witness. I mean, this is a book that has changed lives of people that we both know.
Yes. No, and when I was at Princeton as a chaplain, I kept a whole list, a whole 10 different copies of that book that I could give out to students who were there. And some of them are now priests or nuns, because it's so powerful. Not that Merton didn't have his own problems, but everybody goes.
Now, Merton was 14 years younger than Whitaker Chambers, but he would have had the same curriculum and the same teachers.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And he would have had the same great books curriculum. Now, we're not mentioning my great friend who was there, Mortimer Adler, who was born 1 year after Whitaker Chambers, 1902, probably was a friend of Whitaker Chambers.
Quite likely. And Jack Barzun was there also.
And it was Mortimer Adler who, in this great book seminar with Professor Erskine, first read the Summa Theologica, which led to him becoming America's preeminent Thomist, and eventually Christian, and eventually Catholic.
Catholic, yes. So it's the power of literature, of great literature, is something we always have to come back to the classics and great autobiography and so on. And that really helps us in terms of understanding the human person and in understanding ourselves. And then, again, sharing that love of God that we have with the people around us in very concrete ways.
Well, you really have to sort of scratch your head over this generation of students coming out of Columbia, between the roaring 20s and up to the war.
Yes.
There's just one after another of formative intellectual, political figures.
Yes, yes. Well, they don't have those great professors in the same way as they did at that time, but at least they still hold on to the curriculum, which, of course, can be taught poorly or not so, or very well. But at least you're reading the great books, and that's a good start.
Father C.J. McCloskey, Thanks again for being my guest on Church and Culture, and look forward to having you back again soon.
Thank you. It's always a joy to be with you and your listeners.
And to all of you who have been listening, please join me this day, this time, next week for Church and Culture.
If you have any comments or questions about Church and Culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Dunn-Hagarmo, co-publisher and editor-in-chief of the Chaldean News. It's a news magazine for the Chaldean community, about the Chaldean community, and for anyone who wants to engage the Chaldean community. As Christians from Iraq, Chaldeans are proud supporters of Ave Maria Catholic Radio. We invest many hours into this monthly news magazine to keep you invested in the community. You can subscribe or advertise today. Contact us at www.chaldeannews.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
How can we talk about faith with someone who doesn't believe in moral absolutes? Today on Homeschool Heartbeat, Bill Foster helps us reach past skepticism to the person behind it.
Conversations with skeptics can become really heated, and it makes it hard to stay focused. What are some of the root ideas of moral skepticism that we should address?
Moral skepticism is prevalent in our culture because it relies heavily on emotions and preferences. Moral relativism, the worldview behind moral skepticism, is popular because it sounds so tolerant and inclusive. The root idea here is that people should decide for themselves what is right or wrong. Relativists say that they want to liberate the world of moral absolutes, yet they evaluate their own preferences to the level of absolutes and expect others to follow them.
Bill, it seems today that disagreeing with someone is considered intolerant. How do you deal with this?
Many moral objections are based on contradictory or self-defeating ideas. The skeptic's charge of intolerance is a prime example. Disagreement is not the same as intolerance. In fact, disagreement is the foundation of true tolerance. If I already agree with someone, then I don't need to tolerate his view. Disagreement is often a good thing because it requires both sides to examine their views. To bring the point home to the skeptic, we could ask, are you being intolerant of my alleged intolerance? True tolerance means respecting a person's right to express a view while also having the freedom to disagree with it.
Bill, thanks for reminding us that truth is never relative. I'm Mike Ferris.
If you appreciated Bill Foster's ideas today for reaching out to skeptics, you can learn more about his book, Meet the Skeptic, by going to our website at homeschoolheartbeat.com. And if you'd like to receive Homeschool Heartbeat's daily email transcript, visit our website at homeschoolheartbeat.com or call us toll-free at 1-866-338-8614.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. Today is the first Friday of the month, and we give special honor and worship to the Sacred Heart of Jesus in reparation for the sins of the world. This heart is the core of the pro-life movement, which is a movement of self-sacrificing love. Nothing can stop the love of the heart of Jesus, which is the meaning of the flame we see. This love is met by rejection and hatred.